Who's watching your home when you're not there? Protect your home with a security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer. Call now and get $850 of hardware and activation for free. Call 1-877-816-3377. That's 1-877-816-3377. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions and Protect Your Home license numbers.
Blog Talk Radio.
And this is the Herbetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon, and tonight we are presenting a discussion on sex magic. Now we'll discuss the differences between the Eastern and the Western conceptions, and we'll trace the origin of the Western magical child conception from its Platonic and Gnostic and Kabbalistic roots through its various modern versions, and including the non-orgiastic Caretza method, which some people think may have derived from from medieval chivalry, the troubadours. And we will examine the sacred marriage, the Hieros Gamos, and its ancient myth ritual theme, which eventually became the great rite of the modern Wiccans. And we'll look at the contributions of Pascal Beverly Randolph and his influence on Theodore Roos and Kellner's German system, which, of course, Crowley took to England and the United States. And we'll discuss Kenneth Grant. And modesty permitting, we'll set forth the do's and the do-nots of effective practice. And so, as I said in the abstract, snuggle up with your significant other, tune in, and let's get it on. Okay, this is, of course, a controversial subject, and for some people, an embarrassing subject. Let's put this show on an R-rated basis here. Send the children off to do something else, and we'll see if we can't get into this on an adult basis here. So we said that first we would discuss the Eastern and the Western concepts. Put this in perspective here. Now, it's a good idea to do that because there has been some interchange of Eastern and Western ideas, but essentially there is a basic difference between the two systems that could be described as Western. The Western system is a sort of a sexual alchemy, whereas the Eastern system is a transcendental yoga. Now, that takes some explaining here. So, the Western system of sex magic derives from primarily Western sources, I believe. It goes back to the Gnostics. In fact, if you read some of the early church fathers, one of the ways that you can find out about the Gnostics is that you got to read what the church said about them to discredit them because everything else that they wrote, the church managed to destroy. So when it comes to sexual practices, so consequently, we have to sort of interpret Gnostic sex magic through what the church fathers wrote about, to trying to disparage it and discredit it. And one of my favorites is the Phanerion of Epiphanius, he is one of the fathers of the church. And he preached this sermon. we published this in one of the early Seventh Rays. And this is just delightful because you can see this old guy up there preaching this sermon way back in, I don't know, 400 AD, something like that. And he's up there saying, well, what these people do is just hideous and horrible and awful, and it's so bad that I just have to tell you what it is, and I got to explain it to you so you can realize how bad it is. And so then he launches into it. And he describes, of course, how they take their obscene sacrament, which of course is semen, and that they consider that to be like the Holy Communion. Well, that is of course an aspect that became definitely an aspect of Western sex magic, and the idea that the semen is sacred, which is, well, it should be, and you know, it's the creative force. Now, in the Western system, there is a very, very profound concept at work here, and this needs to be carefully explained because you really won't understand Western sex magic unless you understand this aspect of it. According to Plato, before every thing comes into physical manifestation, there is an astral preform. Now, in Kabbalistic terms, that's the Yetzirah dimension, is the astral dimension, the preform dimension, the creative dimension, and there's a template or a preform of everything that exists physically, according to Platonic and Neoplatonic philosophy. And this, of course, also is adopted in Gnostic philosophy. And the idea here is that the creative process, which mankind has been endowed with, we can create. We can create other people. We do, you know, we can, as one, and I remember a line from that movie March or Die, when the French archaeologist is spouting up. He says, well, any poor ignorant Bedouin can create a human being with his woman, and he can just, well, yes, that's true. We do. We have this creative ability. We can choose to create a child between man and a woman. We do this. And this is a very, very great creative process. I mean, this is, angels can't do this. You know, angels, you know, they would have to go, and even demons can't do this. They got to go steal semen from some guy. A succubus comes and steals the semen. That's the only way they can do it. So angels and demons can't create the way humans can. We are semi-divine in this respect. So the idea here is that even if we don't have consummation, in other words, if the little sperm doesn't, the one little sperm doesn't win its way to the egg and get in there and actually create a physical baby, regardless of that, the act itself, the sexual intercourse act itself, is creative. And so, according to this theory, this Platonic theory and the Neoplatonic theory and Gnostic theory and Kabbalistic theory, because this is where Kabbalah derives from these sources, according to this theory, if a man and a woman come together, they're going to create something. And even if it's just a man doing it, not a woman. This is unfortunately women can't create demons all by themselves. Sometimes I think they can, but then again, according to theory, they can't. But a man can, because a man can produce an outpouring of sperm all by himself. He doesn't need a woman to do it. So he can produce a bunch of demons. That's why we got so many demons flying around, is because we're producing them all the time, supposedly, and larvae and the astral and demons and whatever. But when a man and a woman come together and they have sexual intercourse, there is a creative process involved here, whether the sperm actually fertilizes the egg or not. Now, that's the operative principle behind all of this. So therefore, if the man, and I think the woman too, but then of course the people who created this system, a lot of them thought that the woman didn't even need to know about it. As long as the man did, it was okay. And we don't agree with that anymore. That's not the way it's done these days. But still, the idea is, if the man who's sending out the sperm, if he concentrates, and the woman too, in our modern theory, on a particular purpose for this magical child that they're creating, and consecrates this magical child to a purpose, to accomplish something, the force is incredibly strong. This is a tremendous power of magic, because this is the creative act. This is the supreme creative act that human beings are being endowed with. And so consequently, this is their most powerful creative act. Now, we all know that in magic, visualization, is very important. Creative visualization, creative intent, creative concentration. All of these things are tremendous. Well, imagine how super important this is if you combine it with man's most potent and overwhelmingly emotionally charged act. You can do this, and this gives it a terrific power. And I can tell you from personal experience that this system really does work. And it really is effective. And it's so effective that it's one of the reasons why I'm convinced why the Christian Church and various and the Muslims and to some extent the Jewish rabbis don't want you doing this sort of thing. Now, in the case of the Jews, this is not quite as restrictive on this. In fact, bringing down the Shekinah on Friday night you could say that's actually a form of sex magic. It's made very transcendental and whatever, but it is. And the Christians are dead set against it. They don't want you to have sex for any other reason than procreation. The whole idea of this is you're usurping the power of God when you do this. And the Christian ministers and priests and all, they don't want you doing this. And so they don't even want you knowing about it. But that's one of the reasons why this is a very suppressed secret doctrine, or until recently. And of course now, in the past 50 years or so, we've all had access to these teachings and whatever. But before that, it was a very, very secret thing. Now, that's essentially this is the Western sex magic, what you might call the alchemical type sex magic. And this is done by the man and, of course, today, the woman, both visualizing and concentrating on what it is they want that magical child to accomplish. And then, and we'll discuss this in a little more detail later, then they have a talisman. They create a talisman to lock this concept in, to give the magical child a purpose and give it a magical structure. And then they consecrate that talisman with the combined essence, and they consume just a trace of the essence themselves, and that's it. And they've done it, and then they repeat it 9 days later. They repeat it, recharge the talisman, reconsume the Amrita, and that's the way it works. That's the Western system. Very, very effective. Now, the Eastern system, on the other hand, is for a different purpose. The Easterners, some of them may be aware of this, and they this sort of thing, and they might do it, but their primary concern in left-hand Tantra, Vama Marj or Bengali Tantra, which is, by the way, and let me make a big correction right now. All Tantra is not overtly sexual. Now, there's a lot of sexual symbolism in regular Tantra, both in Buddhist and in Hindu, and even that, you shouldn't even call it Hindu, because the Hindus don't really, they aren't that fond of it. But let's say Southern Tantra and then Buddhist Tantra. Most tantric practices, even though they might have some sexual symbolism involved in it, don't involve sex at all. Most of them don't. I mean, I spent a year with a Sakya order and Red Hat Tibetan Buddhism and went all through the Vajrayogini program and we did all of this, and sure, there was a lot of sexual symbolism involved in it, but we never engaged in any kind of practice like that. So in spite of what some of these writers have written, most Tibetan Tantra is not overtly sexual. And down in India, most of that Tantra is not overtly sexual. Symbolically, yes, perhaps a lot, but not. But the Tantra that is overtly sexual, the left-hand Tantra, and what that means is, the Shakti, the woman sits on the left, and on Tantra verbs, not actually overtly sexual, she sits on your right. The difference is that the purpose of the sex act is to raise the Kundalini and to bring it all the way up to Sahasrararam, and to have a transcendental visionary experience. And the way they do this, and I tried it, and boy, I wasn't able to, my Shakti wiggled too much, you're supposed to hold you sit in an asana, put your Shakti, the Shakti sits in your lap, and you're connected, and you're interchanging these energy flows, magnetic and electric, through yourselves in a connected situation where you're both aroused, but you can't have an orgasm for 44 minutes. That's an eternity, 44 minutes. And then when you do, after 44 minutes, it's supposed to be like the great explosion of transcendental bliss, and Roman candles go off, and it's like a great fireworks display up above your head, and you're really, reached the transcendental state. So that's the purpose, the primary purpose of the Eastern method of sex magic, is to have this, to transmute the sexual desire into a tremendous tremendous spiritual experience. and as opposed to the Western method, which is to create the magical child, and God's create the talisman to accomplish purpose. So that's the difference between the essentially the difference between the two systems. Now, I got to mention this Carezza method here, some people believe, and whether this is true or not, I can't really determine, but that this was an outgrowth of the medieval troubadours who had this idea of this unrequited love for their lady, and that they would somehow or other they would be very tender and caressing and very loving without actually completing, without actually having an orgasm, or without actually having penetration. So this developed in the Victorian times and later into a very beautiful method, in many ways beautiful. Some people think it's bad because it doesn't allow you to ejaculate, and now they don't like that. But then the Carezza aficionados say that, well, if you get used to this, you're going to get over the, you might experience blue balls a little bit, but then on the other hand, after you get used to it, you won't. And so what you're doing in a way with the Carezza method is you're achieving this transformation, although it's more subtle than the left-hand tantra idea. You're receiving this wonderful glow and this wonderful transcendental state, this altered state of consciousness, just by tenderness and affection and beauty and a very softness, it's love magic. It really is, and I think, although we can't prove this, I mean, I think Sam and Moina Mathers were into this, because we know they were technically celibate, but they loved each other dearly, and they were both tremendous magical practitioners. I mean, they were in altered states of consciousness. So I suspect that Sam Mathers and Moina over in Paris back during the century, I think that's what they were doing. And I've read accounts of where they would people would actually sense their partner would glow with a beautiful blue glow, and they would have this wonderful transcendental nature. I know this may sound very sacrilegious, but I kind of like to think of Jesus and Mary Magdalene doing this. I think this is, yeah, this is personal, but I mean, I like to think of that. I may sound terribly psychoreligious, but actually no, because this Carezza, you could call it, you might even, if you wanted to, you could call it Christian sex magic, if you want to call it that. Anyway, influenced Charlie Russell. Charlie Russell created Ian Crowley. He was a student of Crowley's for a while, and then he broke with Crowley. Created an organization called the Great Brotherhood of God, or the Gnostic Brotherhood of God, either way you want to put it, back in the 1930s, and he was using Carezza as their first sex magic degree. He called it Dionysum. And then they would move into some other phase, and they finally end up with a ninth degree that was pretty close to what we're used to in the German English system, you know, whatever. I'm going to try to avoid mentioning some of these organizations involved in this for political reasons, but the one thing about the GBG's sex magic that bothers me is that I knew Lou Kelling personally. He was our senior advisor back when we started the OTA. And those of you who have his book on sex magic, I don't know whether Charlie Russell ever recommended this or not. I don't think he did, but Lou said that you should envision your sex partner in sex magic as your holy guardian angel. I think this is a disaster. And personally, I think this is a disaster. This, for any number of reasons. So I want to make sure that I say that. I mean, I'm very fond of old Louie and all of that, but oh boy, that's a bad idea. Now, along that line, though, you can and should, in modern sex magic, you can and you should imagine and even invoke into your partner the goddess form, and then she should help you take on the god form. This is what's known as the Hieros Gamos, the sacred marriage. This goes way, way back. This goes back into prehistory, back into the Paleolithic. The idea that you take on the form, as a man, you take on the form of the god, the horned god in our case, old Horny himself, and she takes on the form of the goddess. And you help each other do this magically. Then the two of you, it's almost a slam dunk. You're going to give birth to a divine child, which is, of course, the magical child. And then you have a talisman all prepared, and you do this. So this is the way we conceived it in the Order of the Temple of Astarte. And it's one of the key things about, one of the reasons why we have Baal and Astarte as our patron god and our patron goddess, because that's the perfect archetypal Hieros Gamos. You can't get a better Hieros Gamos than that, because Baal is the fertility and vegetation spirit, the green man, the old horn god. He's the epitome of masculine natural creativity. And Astarte is the moon and Venus goddess, and she's the goddess of and also of the earth, and she is the love goddess personified. So how can you ask for two better personalities, divine personalities, for you to assume? And so consequently, and also too, I'll put a plug in here for our book of the Book of Solomon's Magic, in which we have a chapter on this, and a pretty detailed chapter on this, in which we show you how you can connect the sigil of Baal and Astarte into one perfectly matched, unified sigil. And that, of course, becomes your sigil to impregnate and your sigil to personify the right and give purpose to the magical child. Now, the way we do it is that we use either a magic mirror hanging from the ceiling that you get under and look up at, and in this case, if it's convex, that certainly helps. We have that. Those of you who've seen our videos, you've seen that big mirror we have that hangs. We use that for astral projection. We use it for path workings. We also use it for sex magic. Now, when I say we use it for sex magic, that means that a man and a woman who are already have a relationship and all, you know, whatever, they can use it for sex magic. We don't have orgies or, you know, it's not there's anything wrong with an orgy, but we don't do that. But the method here is to lie under the mirror and look up at the mirror. And you can also, and this works with a floor-to-ceiling or a mirror, a dark mirror, which we call a soul door. You can do this, your invocation is standing up, and then you have your couch. A little costumes help, incense helps, all of the various things you would go into for invoking a god and a goddess in a magical operation you should use. Before we did the show tonight, I was talking with my friend Marie Vargas. She has the Style Coven website, which you ought to go and take a look at. And she's talking about putting romance back in your life, back in your love life. Well, I mentioned this in the Book of Solomon's Magic. If you really want to, if your sex life's getting boring and losing its luster, yeah, you could try this. You know, have your wife take on the goddess Astarte as a persona, and you take on the god Baal, and get together and create something wonderful for yourselves. And it really will. You'll put the romance back in your into your life. Now let's see here. Let me get back to our brief little outline here. The Hieros Gamos, or sacred marriage, was very, very important in ancient times. The king and the queen used to do it every season for planning. And the ziggurats in Mesopotamia, Ishtar and Marduk would get together on top of the ziggurat, and they would they'd do it. All of this would be to help the fertility and the prosperity of the of the country. And so you're replicating that. Now, as I said, this same idea came into the Wiccan tradition via Gerald Gardner in the third degree in Gardnerian witchcraft, called the Great Rite, where the initiation into the Great Rite is to have a Hieros Gamos with the priestess, so this became definitely a part of the modern Wiccan tradition. Now, let's talk about our friend P.B. Randolph here a little bit. Pascal Beverly Randolph and Catherine Ironwode came on and said, "Oh, boy, folks are going to talk about my hero, Pascal Beverly Randolph." And, well, okay, Catherine, we'll talk about old PB, but most people have forgotten him. He's kind of a forgotten man of Western magic. But Pascal Beverly Randolph flourished back before the war between the states. That's also, the Yankees call that the Civil War, and the Southerners call it the War Between the States. But he flourished back in those days, and he was what we used to call a mulatto. In other words, he was a Creole. He was black, and not very black, but he was black, and he was teaching sex magic to white women, and this was, oh boy, so he was a very controversial figure. And we owe, however, regardless of where you're at on that, we owe P.B. Randolph quite a debt, because this man really, really knew his magic, and he had quite an influence on both Theodore Roos and Karl Kellner in the German system, the idea of the Christ and the magical child, and what's been referred to as the ninth degree. This was almost right straight down the line from D.B. Randolph. Now, I want to mention that if you want to try to dig up Randolph's writings on this, you're going to have a hard time because he was very secretive about it. Well, he had to be under his circumstances. The only way you're really going to find it is one of his students, a lady by the name of Maria Maglowska, put together a book which has since been attributed to Randolph himself. Now, it's a culling and an editing from his writings. It's called Sexual Magic. Magic is spelled M-A-G-I-C. And it was translated, edited, and introduced by Robert North. Now, this book is, it was quite rare for a while. Herman Slater published it back in 1970, limited edition. And it got to be quite expensive, but I'll bet you can find it online these days. It's called Sexual Magic by Pascal Beverly Randolph, translated and edited and introduced by Robert North. Now, in this, you're going to find a whole bunch of things that you're going to just really, if you're fairly well versed in magic, you're going to find a lot of things that are going to really knock your socks off. For instance, fluid condensers. You think Martin came up with all of these? No. Randolph's got fluid condenser formulas in there that are more complex than Martin's. Flashing colors. You think that's Golden Dawn? No. Randolph came up with that first. The volt principle, the principle of volting, Randolph came up with that first. Charging magic mirrors, Randolph came up with that first. Randolph, and of course, as I said, and the so-called ninth degree techniques, this is Randolph. Randolph was very, very influential on the Brotherhood of Luxor. And the Brotherhood of Luxor came along before the Golden Dawn, actually. And it was sort of a mail-order mystery school. In fact, that's about the best way to describe it. Amwork used the Brotherhood of Luxor as a model. Crowley, Crowley's AA is more modeled on the Illuminati than it is on the Brotherhood of Luxor. But Brotherhood of Luxor was a mail-order mystery school back right after the War Between the States, before the Golden Dawn got started. And P.B. Randolph was very, very influential. A lot of their material derived from P.B. Randolph. But then, for a while there, he was recognized. But then, for some unknown reason, Randolph was a bit of a eccentric. And he walked out in his front yard one day and got in an argument with his neighbor. And he pulled out a pistol, and instead of shooting his neighbor, he shot himself in the head. And that, of course, was pretty shocking. And so at this point, the Brotherhood of Luxor and everybody else that had been reprinting his articles and books and whatever, they all wrote him out of history. He became like Akhenaten. He was written out of everything, you know. He was the forgotten man. But today, you know, we're finally recovering Randolph and realizing what an influence he was. And he had a lot to do with that, with German sex magic. In fact, I have a cartoon coming up in the seventh ray this, believe it or not, I've got the galley proof, so we're finally going to get that out. The origins of German sex magic, and this is a real hoot. That'll be coming with P.B. Randolph. It'll be coming up. Anyway, we can't talk about sex magic without mentioning Old Crow. So the story, of course, about how Crowley got started with the OTO, and this is Crowley the RTL was going over in Germany, and they had the Kellner, Karl Kellner, claimed that he had gotten all this material from a trip over to India and whatever. Well, that's what Kellner claimed, but actually he got it from P.B. Randolph. But it was going pretty well in Germany, but very secretive. And then Crowley published a little book over in England. This was about 1912, I guess, something like that. He published a book called The Book of Lies. And in chapter 69, he revealed a secret. Well, you know, in this little poem in chapter 69. Well, Theodore Roos, who was at that point the head of the OTO over in Germany, got this book, and he was visiting England, and he knocked on Crowley's door one evening, and he was a ferocious knock on Crowley's door, and Crowley went to the door, and here was Theodore Roos standing there with Crowley's book in his hand, and Theodore Roos said, "Mr. Crowley, here Crowley, stealing our secrets." And Crowley, of course, looked at Theodore Roos, and he said, "Oh, what's a secret? Is that some tropical bird? No, our secrets, the secrets of sex magic." So, of course, he invited Roos in, and before they got done with, you know, their argument, Roos finally realized that Crowley, you know, had come up with this all by himself. So the end result of this was that Roos gave Crowley a charter to run the OTO in England and in the United States, okay? So, Theodore Roos. Now, then Crowley, of course, was commissioned to write the rituals, and so he couldn't wait to do that. That was a lot of fun, so he did that, and that's how the whole thing got started with the OTO. And that's also answers a question. I think one of our Frank or somebody wanted to know about this Amort connection. Well, Theodore Roos, who was very active in all different branches of German occultism, Theodore Roos was one of the signatories on Spencer Lewis's charter from the Continental Adepts, verifying Spencer Lewis's bona fides to start a magical order in the United States. Based upon this, Crowley in the 1920s tried to take over Amort, and of course they said, "Well, that's very nice, but no thank you." that was the answer to that one. Anyway, so Crowley, you know, went on and developed this system with the OTO, and following Crowley, Kenneth Grant, who we talked about a few weeks ago, Kenneth Grant, after Crowley's death, presumed to become the head of the OTO in England, something he eventually gave up because I think even Kenneth Grant himself, he realized he was going off on his own creative kick and going, you know, off in his own direction. And so he eventually stopped claiming that he was the head of the OTO. But Kenneth Grant, in several of his books, delved into the whole sexual magic thing in such a technical, to such a technical degree, both in the left-hand tantra of the East and also the alchemical magic of the West, to the point where he got so clinical about everything and all of the endless different secretions and what you could do with them and all this kind of stuff, that it got to be actually a bit ludicrous, I thought. And although I like Kenneth Grant, I think his work is very, very imaginative, and it's on the dark side, but it's very imaginative and very creative. the technicalities of all of these secretions and all of these various things and this, that, and the other thing got to be a little much, and so we're satiring this aspect of Kenneth Grant in the upcoming Seventh Ray with a nice satirical piece called Beyond the Nostrils of New Wit, which I think you kind of enjoy. But along that line, what I was going to say is this, and this is, we end up here with the do's and the don'ts of effective sex magic practice. Now, if you get into this, and I strongly encourage all of you healthy young guys and gals to give this a try, because don't do it just for fun or for it. You should never try to use this as a seduction thing. This really has to be done between two people who have a relationship, and it's not something to go seducing people with. And as I'm going to emphasize this over and over again today. Now, today, and I don't care who says otherwise, it is not considered ethical for you to have, if you're a man, to have sex, to do sex magic with a woman and not tell her what you're doing. Because they used to do this, and it says in some of the secret documents and all that, and don't do this. I mean, if you're going to do sex magic, for heaven's sake, the two of you should both be equally involved, because otherwise you're using somebody for, even if they are your significant other or your wife or whatever, you don't want to do that. So that's one thing not to do, is don't fall into this business of, well, I'm going to do this and I'm not going to tell her about it. We don't want to do that. Now, the other don'ts that I'm going to mention here is, Don't get over technical. Now, I know you start reading these secret papers and reading Kenneth Grant and reading these secret OTO papers, all of which are available on the internet. Even, I think, I'm not going to mention the names of them, because you can go and dig and you can find them, but they're all available. There are no secrets about this anymore. So consequently, you will run into all kinds of technical stuff and this can be a turnoff. This sex magic should be a romantic, beautiful, romantic, trance-like, magical act. It should not be some sort of clinical, I have to refrain from, is that I'm approved or anything like that, but I don't want to mention all of the various things that the technical sex magic technocrats will tell you that you have to do, but don't. There's only two things you actually have to do. Oh, we got a call? Okay, you're on the air. Who am I talking with? Well, what's the matter? What's the matter? Don't you want to talk about sex? Come on. Well, all right. That's so much. Well, who's there? Come on, at least breathe. All right. Well, that's the end of that. Cut him off. Now, because we don't have all that much time left. Now, the don'ts is, don't get too involved in all of this technical stuff if you don't like it. Now, if you like it, then fine, both of you. If you like it, both of you, then do it. But don't, if you don't like it, because it's going to destroy the most precious thing that you have, and that's your trance, that's your beauty, that's your romance. That needs to be preserved. So therefore, all you have to do is, you do have to touch that talisman with combined Amrita, and you should at least lick your finger, both of you, lick a finger, and make sure you have a tactile of the Amrita. That's it. That's all. You don't have to do any more than that. Now, I guarantee you that it'll work. Also, too, Be sure and observe the moon when you're working. Remember, Picatrix, you really should observe the phases of the moon. Get a good match of the moon, regardless of your astrological aspects. Get a good match of the moon. Now, of course, obviously, and the Germans did a lot of astrological stuff, and you can carry this to great extremes. Don't. But remember that the moon's primary. The next thing you need. Look for Mars and Venus if they're in conjunction, and you got a full moon. That's great. But then also you might be concerned with where Mars and Venus is in your chart. You know, when you're doing this. So, but here again, don't make this overcomplicated. You don't want to shoot yourself in the foot by overcomplicating the whole thing. Keep the romance going. Now, does anybody else want to give us a call? Our guest caller number is 347-857-1830. Now, you should know that by this time. Anyway, this is a very, very powerful, a very potent, and a very beautiful technique. There's nothing in sex magic, if it's done right and if it's done properly, there's nothing to be ashamed of in it. It's a beautiful technique. And I'm talking about the Western technique now. The Eastern technique, as I said, I assume it's beautiful. My attempt at it didn't work out very well, sex magic is and should be a beautiful and a very private process. Now we can talk about it, and we can write about it, and we can, but it's a private process. It's private, intimate, between two people who really know each other, love each other, and have a relationship. And for them, there's nothing whatsoever to be ashamed of in this. This is beautiful. If you want to read a little more about it, get the Book of Solomon's Magic. That's a little more specific. And this just about wraps it up. The only other thing that I really ought to mention is that you can also, and we didn't touch on this, and this is the marriage of people and elementals on the astral. You can find elementals and entities on the astral, and you can have sexual relations with them. In fact, there was even a guy, I think his name was Ventris, way back in the 1840s, who had a cult where people were going back and having sex with long dead people, or making love with Cleopatra and that kind of thing. So you can have sex on the astral plane. That's another aspect of this. And there's an old classic called the Comte de Gabinet, a French book back from the 1700s late 1600s, where he describes the mating of men and women with elementals, sylphs and undines. And you know, what's our friend who did the book on the undines lately? He might get into that. But this is all, classified under the category of sex magic. So that is about wraps this one up. And we got 7 minutes left. Okay, here again, guest caller number 347-857-1830. So give me a quick call if you need to. And the only other thing I will mention that I didn't mention before is the Order of the Palladium, which was that French anti-Masonic hoax that Leo Taxil created back in the 1890s, in which he had this fictitious character Diana Vaughan, high priestess of Albert Pike's satanic Palladian masonry, and she was supposedly seducing the crown heads of Europe and the financial heads of European banks and all this kind of stuff, and this was being done in the name of satanic masonry. Of course, this was all a hoax, but in a way, But in a way, you know, maybe there was a Diana Vaughan on the astral. That might have been something that either Taxol created, and perhaps these people even imagined it because it was very popular. I got a call. You're on the air. Who am I talking about?
Hi, Poke. This is Secret Admirer.
Oh, hi.
Hi. So, I know you only have a couple minutes left, but I was just going to ask you if you have any suggestions as far as age, when people are, you know, going to do sex magic. Does it matter that the woman's menopausal, or have you found, do you have any comments on that?
I don't see any reason why they can't have sex magic. To tell you the truth, I think that it's primarily in the astral this being done in the astral. So I think that probably the menopausal situation doesn't really affect it. I don't think it would. I think we could go ahead and...
Does that relate back to what you said in the beginning about Platonism?
What?
When you were commenting in the beginning of your talk tonight about Plato, about it being, you know, the energy form in the astral.
The preform. So, I think that preform, you know, I don't think that the menopausal situation is going to affect that preform. I think personally, just my personal feeling is it'll work anyway. I think a little bit of Viagra and a little bit of MD and you're good to go. Yeah, but that's your question. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Shoshana.
Appreciate it. Bye bye. Okay. So. And by the way, Lou Culling was the last of the Palladians, and so now I suppose I'm the last of the Palladians. And so you remember what the motto of the Palladian order was? We know how to love. Oh boy, how are they? Boy. So I think we did a show. We discussed the Palladians before. Next week we're going to go from the whatever to the sublime, and next week it's going to be the Rosicrucians. And that's just about any kind of Rosicrucian you can think of, not just San Jose Rosicrucians, but just Rosicrucians, the whole Rosicrucian tradition. Oh boy, so we're going to have fun. And next week, let's have some call-ins, and we'll talk to you then, and meanwhile, good magic.